From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Megan Mack. Our connection this hour was first made in mid-September in parts of Pittsburgh, where white supremacist flyers were left on driveways overnight. The flyers promoted a previously unknown organization whose goal is to, quote, advance European white races, end quote. Weeks later, similar flyers showed up in parts of Brighton. A number of Pittsburgh residents joined together to form an organization that celebrates diversity. That group is called Pitts Forward. Members urged police to track down the creator of the flyers, and last week police did just that. But officers explained that they could not release the Rochester man's name because he had not broken any laws. The officers had worked with the Monroe County District Attorney's Office, which determined that the flyers were political in nature and constituted protected speech. Members of Pitts Forward thanked the police for their work, but some are wondering why this kind of language is not considered threatening or criminal. So this hour, we'll have a conversation that starts with that question. Then we'll talk about how Pitts Forward and other organizations are working to build a more inclusive community. We want to note that we reached out to the man who created the flyers. We invited him to participate in this discussion, but he has not responded to any of our messages. We also invited Bill Smith, the supervisor of the town of Pittsburgh. He thanked us for the invitation, but he is unavailable today. So in studio with me, I do have Brighton Town Supervisor Bill Maley. Thanks for joining us today, Bill.
My pleasure, Megan. Thank you.
Kendra Evans is in studio. She's the co-founder of Pitts Forward. Nice to see you again.
Thanks, Megan.
And Kevin Beckford is a member of Pitts Forward as well. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And on the phone is Chris Thomas, an attorney and partner with Nixon Peabody. Thanks for joining us, Chris.
You're welcome.
I know you've got a very busy week, so we appreciate you taking the time.
Yes, a big week.
Listeners, we will be taking your questions and comments this hour, as always, but I'd like to set some parameters for this discussion here at the top of the hour. This is meant to be a productive conversation, and we strive to include all viewpoints, with the caveat that we are all respectful of each other. Our station policy is that we do not tolerate hate speech on our air, so if there are comments that include language deemed unacceptable under our terms, those comments will not be aired. I'm confident that we can have a very constructive and inclusive conversation, so thank you in advance for respecting that. So I'd like to start with our guest from Pitts Forward. Were you surprised that police in the DA's office decided there was no legal recourse for the distribution of those flyers and that they were considered protected speech?
This is Kevin. I would say initially we were, just because it felt very invasive, you know, to actually have the flyers put on the lawn of the different homes and the neighborhoods. At the end of the day, though, after listening carefully to what, you know, how they did it and sort of the approach that was taken, it makes sense. It just feels uncomfortable because it's not a message that really promotes inclusivity.
Mm-hmm. I can definitely understand how it falls under protected speech. As Kevin said, it's very uncomfortable. It's disheartening. It's frightening. You think about protected speech as happening by people disagreeing and showing different viewpoints. And in a forum such as this, in public, in daylight, where people can contribute and keep it at the discourse level. And so this felt much more personal. And the greatest surprise for me was not referring to it as protected speech, but that it was political in nature. And that was something that just struck me the wrong way.
I know you mentioned during, maybe it was a mini news conference, that politics to you is about working together. And so that goes into your not quite understanding how these flyers are political. Did you want to elaborate on that at all?
I personally, as a citizen, I feel very uncomfortable with the fact that things become very, political comments become very personal in nature. Just like the disclaimer that you started the show with, we shouldn't be talking to each other in a hateful way. We should be talking to each other in a persuasive way. That's how you bridge the gap between people, between beliefs, between cultures and different ideas. And that's what I would characterize as political, where we're sitting around a table working towards a common goal. We might not have the same path to get there, but we're going to be respectful on that journey.
Mm-hmm. Supervisor Maley, I'll turn that question over to you as well. Were you surprised that there was no legal recourse? And were you surprised by any of the results of the investigation?
Well, I certainly understand why the representatives of Pitts Forward found the speech to be very troubling, because, frankly, it was very troubling to me. And it's the kind of speech that really has no place, from my perspective, in the discourse in a community like ours. But I do understand the First Amendment is very important. The First Amendment really is so much a part in the Bill of Rights of what makes this country who we are. And it enables us to have the kind of productive political and other dialogues that are so important to us. So, you know, in that sense, I understand and I don't disagree with the conclusion. And it was a conclusion that was reached only after a significant investigation, both on the part of the Brighton Police Department and the Monroe County Sheriff, including conversations with this man, as well as conversations with the district attorney and a review of Attorney General Schneiderman's recent manual on dealing with hate speech, hate crimes.
Chris Thomas, we asked you to join us today because you've done extensive work on the subject of speech and free expression. Did the DA's office get this one right, in your opinion?
Yeah, 100% right. You know, and I've heard what the other guests have said about being made to feel uncomfortable and having questions about whether this is actually political speech or not. And from a personal perspective, I completely understand the discomfort and the confusion about whether it's political or not. But from a legal perspective, this wasn't really even a close call. And that's because the First Amendment and Supreme Court cases dating back over 60 years have essentially said that the First Amendment, which is essential to who we are as a people, makes wide room for speech, even speech that makes us uncomfortable. And in fact, that's where the First Amendment really obtains its meaning and its value. It's not in conversation that everybody feels good about and agrees about. We all prefer to have that, and I don't disagree with the guest that the most productive way of addressing these issues would have been, you know, in the light of day and across a table, using persuasive words instead of, you know, the nasty pseudo-threatening words that were used. But the First Amendment says, hey, look, we as our government does not get to decide what we get to say, except under very limited circumstances. Nor does our government get to say what we are allowed to think from a political perspective, except in no occasion. The issue for a First Amendment perspective is whether the speech leads to imminent lawless action and speech that is likely to incite or produce imminent lawless action. That's language from a Supreme Court case from 1969 called Brandenburg versus Ohio. And the Supreme Court in that case said, look, you know, just someone out there, and in Brandenburg, it was a KKK fellow speaking, and the Supreme, and he was arrested, prosecuted, convicted, and the Supreme Court said, wait a second, no, that's way too broad. His speech, though odious, is protected. And what I want to put forward, and I'll just take a second more before I turn it back over, Megan, is that the First Amendment has worked absolutely perfectly in this situation. First of all, we have had a man espousing odious views, odious speech. And what did that do? Did that incite a groundswell of people who were attracted to his message? No. Instead, what did it do? It incited a groundswell of good people who believe that those words and that kind of message has no place in our society to organize and to what? Speak. And it is what our founders wanted us to do. They wanted us to have a marketplace of ideas where all ideas could rise, all ideas could be heard, and then through that marketplace, we would then, as an educated public, pick which ones are garbage, like the odious speech that this man disseminated through Brighton and Pittsburgh, and which words are worthy of public support, namely the ones of your guests who are denouncing bigotry and denouncing hatred. So I wanted to draw attention to the fact that our First Amendment has worked perfectly here, and most importantly, our government officials didn't get in the way. We don't have government officials saying what we can think and what we can't think, what we can say and what we can say, cannot say. Does that make us uncomfortable sometimes? Yes, but that is the whole dialectic purpose that the First Amendment has. Someone putting out a thesis, in this case, odious words. Someone putting out the antithesis or the antithesis, in this case, Pitts Forward. And the marketplace working to allow the best idea to float and the worst idea to sink. I'll step off my soapbox now and let other people talk.
Chris, I think you're making some excellent points, and it speaks to what's going on in our community and the wonderful work that groups like Pitts Forward and Curb and Brighton are doing.
Right.
And I just wanted to follow up to something that you mentioned, Chris, about no one really responding to the flyers. And the Democrat and Chronicle reported that the man who distributed them could not get enough people to attend a meeting or sign papers that would help him form a nonprofit organization. And he allegedly expressed some frustration over that. But as you mentioned, there's been this surge of activity on the other side. So I'll turn this over to the Pitts Forward members. Have you seen an uptick in membership in your group over the past few months? And what do you expect going forward?
So your short answer is yes. In fact, it's actually been very overwhelming that, you know, this initial act of, you know, really of hate, if you will, really resulted in a wake-up call. So within Pittsford, for example, that first week that Kendra and her husband rallied the support of and really brought the awareness of this issue to the table, we had 200-plus people marching in the rain. That for the first time we're coming together that never had met before. And it was, in fact, at the end of that march, the question came up was, what's next? What do we do next? You know, we don't want it to stop here. And I think probably the key thing, it was a wake-up call, was that silence is not a position. It's important for us to be able to have a consistent, clear message of inclusivity and welcomeness. And I think this is, so I think in the long run, as much as the person who may have done this or the group, it doesn't matter. Quite honestly, we're well beyond that. At this point right now, it's about how do we continue the conversation of inclusivity, period.
And I think just to respond, I'm very thankful for the comments regarding our First Amendment protection. And I'm not suggesting that we disband the First Amendment. No one in Pitts Forward is suggesting to get rid of our First Amendment rights. But it's important to know that words are protected, they're not free, and they come with consequences. And these words had a very significant impact, and based on historical context, some people of marginalized groups felt very threatened by the words. And I understand the legal perspective, I'm not questioning that, but I am bringing to light what people felt in mm-hmm. regards to these words and the impact that they had, and how it not only negatively may impact the person who the marketplace didn't support, but how it is, as Kevin was saying, positively impacting our community, and how many people showed up for the Unity Walk, the fact that we have nearly 600 Unity signs throughout our community, the fact that we've had three community dialogues that are so well attended that we don't always have enough space to accommodate everyone comfortably, that our community is moving forward. We are redefining what it means to be a neighbor and to work together and to really meet each other on a personal level. So it has had the, I would say, opposite effect of the intent.
And the issue of accountability is something that a listener brought up via email. This comes from John in Pittsford. He says, I'm less concerned with the question of the flyer's message being protected or not. Protected or not, then I am with the question of accountability. Speech, if anything at all, has consequences. Consequences can only be exacted and meaning clarified when speech occurs in the open. Chris, do you have any follow-up comments regarding accountability in this case?
Well, I think that's absolutely right. If you're going to say it, you shouldn't expect that either private individuals or media sources are going to protect your identity. So I've been a little bit bemused by the fact that while this individual's name is out there, as well as where he works and so forth, that the local media companies and media outlets, including this one, have been reticent about publishing it. Because I commend you for having reached out to him to ask him if he wanted to join. And you know, frankly, this man has a coward's approach to his speech. He drives around in the dead of night, dropping leaflets around on people's driveways and lawns, scuttles away under cover of darkness, and is then afraid to stand up and say, yes, it was me, and I stand behind what I said. So in terms of accountability, there has been some. His name's out there. His name was discovered by both law enforcement, and you know, Bill knows that story. But it was also found out by individuals in our community, two of whom reached out using pseudonyms to say, "Hey, I'm interested in your idea," and that's part of what uncovered this. And you know, they falsely reached out and said, "I'm interested in your idea," and that disclosed who this person was. You know, from my perspective, there really is no reason that local media companies are holding back on identifying him. Can't say that he committed a crime, because he didn't. But he can be held accountable by being identified as the speaker, and then allow him to defend what he had to say.
And in terms of accountability, some people have suggested, and I understand this as well, that did he violate a town ordinance regarding littering? And from my perspective, suggesting that he be charged with littering really minimizes the impact of what he did, because what he did was serious. It did have an impact on individuals in a very, very negative way. And so, you know, from my perspective, beyond other legal issues relating to whether it would make sense to charge him with littering, I just don't think that's the way to hold someone accountable for an act as serious and as, frankly, repugnant to so many people in the community.
Yeah, I totally agree with Bill on that.
As do I. On that point, we do have a caller who has a question related to that. Before I take your call, Bill, I just want to say, in regards to releasing this individual's name, that's an extensive discussion we had in our newsroom here at WXXI, and we decided that because police were not releasing his name, that we would not release his name. There are media outlets who have, and again, you can find his name. It's out there. But just from the station's perspective, we've decided to respect what the police have asked us to do. So, but I certainly understand your points completely. And again, it was an extensive discussion that we had. There's a lot at stake. But let's jump to the phones. The phone is starting to ring. This is Bill in Spencerport. Hi, Bill.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking the call.
Sure, go ahead.
You were just talking about the littering charge and how you didn't feel that it was appropriate, and I tend to agree with you. But I guess I think by not charging him with something, just letting him off the hook, whether it's littering or if trespassing would have applied. I mean, if somebody were to come into my neighborhood and put a bunch of flyers on my lawn that I objected to, I would want whatever law was applicable to be enforced and that person be charged. So I'm curious as to why there wasn't some kind of charge regarding trespassing or littering that could have applied. It should have been applied.
Can I just answer that here quickly for Bill?
Sure. Yeah. Go ahead, Chris.
Bill, during election season, if your neighborhood is anything like my neighborhood, you have politicians coming around putting things into your mailbox and dropping them off on inside your door.
Right.
That's political speech, and there are people who do not want to have that put into their mailbox or put into their front door.
Well, my understanding is if there's not a stamp on it, you're not allowed to put anything in a mailbox. It's a federal offense.
That's correct.
But the further point here is that it's, you know, separate the stamp is the mailbox, that's a diversion, because as you know and I know, you get things hanging on your door, you get things put in your storm door, and you might not want it. The government doesn't have a place for saying, you know, I'm gonna allowed Bill Maley to go onto Chris Thomas's front lawn and, you know, put a flyer in there. But I'm not going to let this guy who distributed these flyers. So that's where I was going earlier with the notion that the government is not in a position to decide who gets to drop things off at in people's driveways or lawns or sidewalks. The mailbox is a slightly separate issue, but you know, in this case, I think that the the Brighton police and the DA got it completely right.
All right, I guess I understand. I don't totally agree, but I understand the position. So, thanks for that.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you, Bill. Chris Thomas, I know your time is very limited. I have one more question for you before we have to let you go. What are some examples of speech that may not be protected? Just so we have something to put in context.
Well, it has to be. It can be race-related speech, for instance, that's aimed at a specific person and aimed at inciting a a physical confrontation. So for instance, speech that creates a hostile workplace, that is an example where the courts will step in and say, that is not protected. There are labor and employment laws that are against that. But if you think about it in the following terms, you'll have the sort of the broad perspective, and that is speech that leads to imminent lawless action and that it's likely to incite it or produce it. It has to be directed to a person or a specific group. It can't be just sort of amorphous, the neighborhood of Pittsburgh. It has to be much more pointed than that. And before I jump off here, one of the things that concerns me now is that I think that we're not doing a particularly good job in our schools and in our community about educating people about the First Amendment. There was a survey done a couple of months ago by an outfit called McLaughlin and Associates for Yale University, and 21% of students at Yale said that the First Amendment is an outdated amendment that can no longer be applied in today's society and should be changed. Also, 35% of respondents, and these are Yalies, agreed that hate speech is not protected under the First Amendment. Both of those things are wrong. Hateful ideas are protected under the First Amendment because we do not want our government telling us what to do or what to think. Rather, we want to have a safety valve for this odious kind of speech, including the kind that was distributed in Pittsburgh and Brighton, to come to the fore, and then to have people like your guests take it on head first, headlong, by the horns, and wrestle it to the ground and have the marketplace idea of ideas proclaim your guests' point of view as the victor, which in terms of the number of people and the attention and the acceptance that their message has received versus what the other person's message has received is resounding vote of confidence in our founders' belief that we Americans are willing, capable, and able to accept some discomfort in the protection of our First Amendment and in the improvement of our community.
Chris, I'm so glad you brought up that McLaughlin and Associates survey. I read that last night, and listeners, I'll post that on my Twitter feed, but the article kicked off with the number 87% of respondents agreed with this statement, quote, "There is educational value in listening to and understanding views and opinions that I may disagree with and are different from my own." And then as the article continued, you're seeing these remarkable numbers like those you just mentioned, Chris, that are just complete misunderstandings. So I'll post it on my Twitter feed. I think it's worth a read. Chris, I know you're pressed for time, and I know you have to run. So I'd like to thank you on behalf of all of us for joining us today and for answering some of those questions.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
See y'all. Bye-bye.
Listeners, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll revisit this topic with our in-studio guest, Brighton Town Supervisor Bill Maley, Kendra Evans, and Kevin Beckford from the group Pitts Forward, and answer more of your questions. Let's see, we have Sam, Greer, and Wendy on the line. We'll get to you right after the break. More Connections is next. Coming up in our second hour, an always popular topic on the program, libraries. We'll talk about the visions and challenges faced by public libraries in the 21st century. The discussion comes at a key time for the Central Library of Rochester, which plans to expand its hours and offer more opportunities for community engagement in the new year. We'll talk about programming, funding, and recommendations for good books. That's next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Megan Mack, filling in for Evan Dawson today. I'd like to welcome my guests in studio again. It's Brighton Town Supervisor Bill Maley, Kendra Evans, and Kevin Beckford from the group Pitts Forward. We were talking during the break about schools and what schools in Pittsford can do to help spread messages of diversity and tolerance. And Kevin, you wanted to make some comments about that.
Sure. One of the things that we have a number of folks that are involved with the Pitts Forward group that are from different parts of the community, and some are very active within the Pittsford Central School District. One of the things we brought to light is really the importance going forward to how do we put within the education system at all levels a better understanding of inclusivity and the importance of diversity, and that difference is important and can be valuable and needs to be understood and embraced. And so it's at the formative stage, so there's not a formal program right now, but it's within high school they have a diversity and inclusion club, but within the middle and lower school, we're looking to see if that activity can start much earlier so that the kids are starting to think about it, and it is an appreciation for the difference that exists.
And it is great to, you know, go into the Brighton schools where I am on a regular basis. I was just at the high school, as I do every semester, teaching a session of their law and government class. And you do walk into a classroom and you see the diversity of the students and their different backgrounds, different faith traditions. And it's an indication of the kind of community Brighton is. But at the same time, you know, we do know that we face these kinds of challenges, and we'll continue to draw a line as people that when we find speech that is so problematic as the folks in Pitts Forward, but also in CURB, Community Uprooting Racism in Brighton, have done.
I'd like to jump right into your phone calls since the phones are lit up. First up is Wendy in Rochester. Go ahead, Wendy.
I just wanted to say that, first of all, I'm very glad that somebody who lives in Rochester didn't think Rochesterians were going to listen to his message, and I feel bad for you guys out there that he thinks you're going to. Secondly, I wanted to bring up, and I'm sorry that Chris Thomas isn't there, but this is an issue around free speech and lies that is really interesting to me, is that a lot of people believe that lies against politicians are illegal and therefore would not be, would not be put out there unless they were true. Thus, the guy who goes someplace thinking that there's a child sex program being put on by Hillary Clinton. I mean, people are believing a lot of nonsense, but that nonsense, unfortunately, is legally protected. And, I kind of get really annoyed because every year people put out flyers against local politicians that are just plain true. And there was some really bad stuff on Roebuck at one point, and it even had a picture of him with two black eyes because supposedly his wife beat him for cheating. And I put something about it on my Facebook about how bad this was, and one of my friends looked at it and said, "Oh yeah, I can't believe he did that." And I said, "Wait a second, that's not what I'm saying. This is a lie. And you're a graphic artist, and you could look at this and tell that it was photoshopped." So on the one hand, we want people to hear every side and measure it and weigh it, but on the other hand, people don't weigh it. And it's interesting because Donald Trump is now talking about making the libel laws stronger, and basically, politicians are not protected from libel. Their only protection is that we actually think and question, and I'll take your responses offline.
Thank you, Wendy. Bill, do you have any thoughts as the attorney in the room now?
Well, we certainly talked a little bit about education. Critical listening is probably an important skill that people need to hear. We've heard a lot about fake news. And it is important that, you know, that people, you know, be able to listen critically. But the First Amendment, I am an attorney by training and not a First Amendment lawyer like Chris is. But, you know, he did, and I think it is important. It is absolutely bedrock to our, to the whole Bill of Rights and to the constitutional freedoms we enjoy, that freedom of speech is very broad and only in those very limited, you know, the proverbial shouting fire in a crowded theater. Does government intervene in speech?
I think the caller made a very good point, and I really like the concept. We want everything in public. We want to be able to hear it and make our own decision. We want an educated populace, and that's one of the things that I would say that our work in Pitts Forward is continuing to do, is that we're encouraging all. We're a nonpartisan group, and we're encouraging all to listen to what's out there, to weigh it yourself, and then to weigh in. We're encouraging people to start taking a more active role in their local politics, in their local school board, in a local PTSA, to really become involved in the community and to speak up for what they believe. It doesn't have to be what I believe, but that's how we keep our democracy going, is by everybody hearing it, weighing it, and weighing in.
And in regards to that, we had Laura on Twitter saying, "Megan, please thank the panelists for holding our community to a higher standard, especially in the context of the degradation of level of discourse at the national level." So thanks from Laura on that. And I think that's one thing, you know, the results of this election, the whole presidential campaign in general, has engendered just more interest in politics and more commitment by people to try to make a difference on whatever side of the political spectrum they stand. So you make a great point, Kendra. Back to the phones. This is Greer in Rochester. Hi, Greer.
Hi. I was just calling again to talk about the First Amendment and how important it is to be able to say exactly what you think. I'm a member of several different disenfranchised historical groups, and so I have, particularly within this election, heard all kinds of language that I find absolutely offensive. But the other side of that is that that gives you the ability to say whatever it is that you feel, and that's critically important. The second thing is that I think in terms of news,
are you there, Greer? I think we might have
I am.
Oh, there we go. Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. The reason I called was to basically once again reiterate the importance of the First Amendment, that I'm a member of several disenfranchised groups historically, and so in this
Greer, I think I have to let you go just because we have a bad connection, but I'll let our guest respond to what you've mentioned so far. Sorry about that, Greer.
One thing I'd like to maybe touch on, and I think this is so important, particularly in social media, that, you know, that's right now the landscape that we end up sharing our ideas. And one of the things that's, and I'm sure we've all noticed this, you know, sometimes when somebody disagrees, you don't always use language that feels appropriate, that having a reasonable and a decent discourse, I think, is so important. And I love the phrase that Chris mentioned, marketplace of ideas. But it has to be public, as Kendra said, and it has to be something where you're it's fact based. You know, having an opinion is good, an opinion that's based on reality and not something that maybe a narrative that's constructed that's not based in fact. And making sure, you know, for example, if you see something online and you disagree with it, disagree in a reasonable, decent way, and stay away from name calling, because that shuts down the discourse and, quite frankly, takes you in a completely different direction than listening and trying to understand. You may not agree with the other person, but understanding their perspective at some point might find where that middle ground may exist.
I think Greer made a very good point. I'm sorry she got cut off, in that we need to be listening to one another. We need to be listening. And whether you're in the marginalized group or in the majority group, we need to be listening. There's far too much talking and not enough listening these days. And so I'm really thankful for the point that she made.
That reminds me of something I just listened to last night. I'm trying to sort through my notes here to find it. My colleague in the newsroom shared an interview with me where a radio host did an interview with a white supremacist. And goodness gracious, I know I had it. Anyway, he explained his reasons for having this conversation. I read the transcript, and they were both very respectful of each other throughout the entire process. They disagreed 100%. There was probably nothing to which they agreed upon except for the parameters of the discussion to be respectful. And I think at the end they walked away still sort of steeped in their own viewpoints, but willing to continue the conversation. So, Kevin, you make an excellent point there. If I can find that, and listeners, I apologize. My desk here is a bit of a mess. If I can find that, I will share that on my Twitter feed as well. We have a question from Dave in Rochester. He says, if there was never any doubt that the dissemination of this literature, meaning the flyers, was protected speech, why would and should police resources have been expended tracking down the source?
That's a good question, and it's certainly one that I've seen asked. And I think the reasons are twofold, but ultimately, you do need to make, by conducting that investigation, one of the things you may learn is whether there is some additional activity going on that goes to the that exception that Chris was talking about potential imminent harm or action, to see whether that speech is only part of some more comprehensive dynamic that is in fact criminal in nature. So I understand it, I've heard that, I think it was absolutely the right decision on the part of the Brighton police and the sheriff to conduct a thorough investigation.
Mm-hmm. Pittsford members, any comments on that?
The only thing I would add is that, you know, certainly the way in which the message was disseminated leaves you with more pause. You know, if it was done in a public fashion, in an open fashion, then no resources would be needed to figure out exactly who it is. And so the fact that he did it at 1 o'clock in the morning, at night, went to a great extent to really keep his identity private. It really leaves you with more of a question on what's the plan. And it wasn't open that anybody could join to say, what's your mission and vision? It was appropriate. It makes sense. And as a resident of Pittsford, I would have been uncomfortable if there was no investigation into it, because, you know, having a child that is of color, I would want to know that if there's a plan to take it to that step where it's not just free speech but an escalation, then I'd want to know that, and so we can be proactive.
And, you know, another question I've heard is, why give it any attention at all? Why not just crumple up the piece of paper and throw it away? And I think, again, the answer is very clear, and that, you know, lies in the quote, which has been attributed to, you know, some different people, Edmund Burke among others, that evil triumphs when good people do nothing. And I think it is very important in situations like these that good people do something. Good people call it to the attention, and rather than just pretend it didn't happen. And I think that's one of the great things that groups like Pits Forward and CURB have done. They have called it to people's attention, sent the message that it is not acceptable, that it's not who they, the kind of community that they view Pittsford and Brighton being. And we've seen the results.
Mm-hmm. Back to the phones. This is Sam in Rochester up next. Hi, Sam.
Hi, how you doing? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I heard one of the ladies on your program there say that our words and our actions have consequences. And I heard about what they were trying to do out in Pittsford there about letting the people know that those type of prejudice and bigotry things won't be accepted there. Now, we just had this gentleman who attacked this kid with autism, and the kid already is having some mental issues. And when he attacked the kid, he made it worse. And you see him walking outside the courtroom smiling. I didn't see anything for him to be smiling about. And I think the judge should have gave him at least 30 days behind bars to let him know he can't be a vigilante. He just can't attack people because he thinks they're going to do something. If that's the case, then we're all going to be attacking each other. And also, he said our words have actions. You know, we have people in the White House, for instance, like Jeff Sessions, who's going to be in the White House, who told one of his counterparts, who was a lawyer in Alabama, that he was an embarrassment to his race for defending an African-American. So, and then you have Donald Trump. If words have action, and words only have actions for certain people, not all people, because if that was the case, I just can't see Donald Trump, Jeff Sessions, and some more of those people being in the positions they're in for some of the things that they have said, some of the things that they have done, and being leaders of the free world. But I get back to the young man. Something should have been done to say you cannot be a vigilante. You cannot take justice in your own hand. This didn't tell that gentleman anything when he attacked this black kid. Now, you tell me, if that would have been an African-American or any other person of color who attacked a white kid with autism, you think he would have walked out of the courtroom with nothing? And I'm not talking about the sentence he gave, but the sentence he gave him wasn't anything.
Okay.
And I listened to you off the air.
Okay, thanks, Sam. Yeah, a lot to respond to, so thanks for all those points. Bill Maley, I see you.
Well, it is a fair question, and it's a hypothetical question, fortunately. But what I think is, you know, there is a positive takeaway, and that is that the community and so many different parts of the community really have raised this young man up, and because speech does have actions, and this is consequences rather, and this is a good example of that the things that were said and done, and of course in this case it was more than speech, there was physical contact. And that takes it out of the realm of just a pure speech situation, I believe, anyway. You know, it's a fair question and one that, you know, goes far beyond and raises the whole question of equity in the justice system, both in Rochester and beyond. And that would be the subject of many hours on this show, I believe. But it's an important concern to raise.
Sam, thank you. You illustrate a really perfect point in that while it was the free speech of this individual who brought us together, he really just put a spotlight, though not on himself, on issues in our community that are widespread and that aren't going away because the flyers are going away. There are some injustices and inequalities that have to continually be addressed. And what's happened through our initiative and with the people that we're coming in contact with, whether it's the elected officials or the police and sheriffs or the schools, people recognize that while we're doing the best we can, it's not always good enough, and that we have to continue to examine our practices and our curriculum and our activities and our language and how do we behave in the most just way possible and give the same access to opportunity for all of the people who live in our towns. And just one really important thing that came out of it for us, as Kevin was talking about the school system earlier, is that Pittsburgh Public Schools are touted for all of the wonderful things they're doing for the kids that are in our community. And I don't want to get into any broader discussion than that. But since all of this has occurred and since the reporting by Evan 2 weeks ago, they've really, they're being so helpful, and they're looking towards partnering with other school systems. They're bringing in a documentary to be viewed in the community that's open to all on January 19th at 6:30 p.m. called I'm Not a Racist, Am I? And so it's small steps. We can work together. We can start to make change because, as he pointed out, this isn't something that's fair across the board. It's not something that's going away. And there are grave concerns throughout our community that we have to find an outlet for.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Kendra is referring to our Degrees of Diversity series, which we launched after a year-long investigation into the state of diversity in local public schools. You can find more about that on WXXINews.org. And again, that was a year-long investigation. We learned a lot, and I'll let you parse through those interviews at your leisure. But thank you, Kendra, for bringing that up, because you make some excellent points. We have time for one more call. This is Bruce in Irondequoit. Hi, Bruce.
Hang on, just a moment. Yes, I was calling in. This is not a free speech issue because they went to people's homes. A person has a right to say what they want to say, certainly, but it has to be in a venue that allows it. It trespasses on people's homes, putting these out there, that's littering. There's all these other things. Nobody is going against their free right to say what they want, but people have a freedom within their own right to be protected in their own home from things they don't want to hear.
Okay, thank you, Bruce. I'll let our panelists respond. We touched on that a bit earlier, but just to reiterate.
Yeah, I think, you know, what Chris talked about earlier, I think really does help to sort of, you know, explain the issue that it, you know, it was an illegal, and it's something that really would fall into the same action that's taken by other types of things that are left at our homes.
Right, political flyers and signs, campaign signs. Yeah. So thank you, Bruce. A couple emails have come in. I'm going to try to work through them as quickly as possible. Let's see. Denise says, we did not get one of the flyers under discussion, but as a mixed-race family living in Brighton, we feel particularly uncomfortable about them. If we had received one, we may have felt threatened. Not having received one, we wonder if the man distributing them knew we were mixed-race. Are we on a list? And she goes on to ask several more questions, but let's start with that one. As far as I know, I don't believe there was any kind of list. I think they were just distributed. Correct me if I'm wrong, Bill.
Well, I have not spoken with this man, but I'm not aware that he had any kind of a list other than I have heard attributed to him the notion that he thought that Brighton and Pittsford had a lot of white people and therefore would be a receptive audience. And as we've said time and time again, not just today, but also outside of this, you know, this conversation, that the reality is very different than that. One, that people in Brighton and Pittsford of all backgrounds, white, other races and ethnic backgrounds, rejected this notion. And so he was wrong. But no, I'm not aware of that he was working from any kind of a list.
And while we've been chatting, my colleague Kat Schwartz has found the interview I was talking about earlier. It's titled A Frank Conversation with a White Nationalist, and that was with, scrolling up here, sorry about that, Richard Spencer, the white nationalist, and Al Letson, who's a radio and podcast host. So again, I'll post that on my Twitter feed. And I think it's just a great example of two people with very, very different viewpoints, not shutting each other down, but willing to listen, willing to have a conversation, and willing to disagree in a respectful way. So,
yeah, I have to say, I actually heard the podcast.
Oh, good. Yeah.
And shared that. And I shared that within Pitts Forward, too, because it was not only a great example of being able to hear differing views, quite honestly, it gave me insight to the movement that Richard Spencer stood for. And I had never heard a complete sort of message. It was just a great interview experience. And it was frightening, quite honestly, because it really showed a strategy that Richard Spencer and his group had that is really counter to the America that we live in today. But for him to be able to articulate that completely, and it was, you know, frightening, but at the same token, eye-opening to say, well, we need to make sure that there's a countermeasure to that. And that's sort of what the groups like CURB and Pitts Forward and other groups, you know, we have to make sure that our voice is consistent, clear, and forward-looking to make sure it's in the room.
Mm-hmm. We're down to our last minute, so I'd like to go around the table just quickly, a few seconds each. What do you hope for the future of Pitts Forward, for Brighton, for CURB? We'll start with you, Kevin.
My hope is twofold. Number one, I'm encouraged by what I see today, which is when every time we have an event, we had one last night, we're seeing increasing diversity of members within Pittsford coming forward, looking to continue that conversation of what can I do. And so the second part of what I'm looking for is how do we take that to eventually create changes back at home in wherever we live or where we work.
Mm-hmm. Kendra?
I think it's about bringing people together to understand that the way I respond to the flyer might not be the way you do, to mm-hmm. realize the way I respond to the world might not be the same as you, and that our lived experiences matter and we need to have a venue to be able to talk about them so that when things bother someone, we can stand together and put our united voice into that marketplace.
Mm-hmm. and Bill.
Well, I certainly agree with that, Kendra. I think, you know, we as a community gain so much when we simply sit down together and talk, break bread together, get to know people from different backgrounds, different cultural experiences. And so much of what is going on, both with groups like these, but other organizations in town, are helping that to happen.
Thank you so much for joining me, Bill Maley, Kendra Evans, Kevin Beckford. More Connections is next.